Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, coming to you all on this May 18th, 2020. I really hope you all had a great weekend out there. It was certainly a wet one, but we did have a really nice day on Saturday, didn't we? You know, we saw the sun here and there, but you know, even though it was cloudy for most of the day, it was mostly dry, and we had temps in the high 60s. So I really love Saturday. I actually got the chance to play my first round of golf for the year. Oh, boy. I am so grateful that in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic that golf can still resume, because I would probably go insane in the membrane if I didn't get a chance to get out there on Saturday. All right, I'm really getting cabin fever. I don't know about you guys, man, but just staying in the house, trying to find ways to be productive and stay in some kind of routine and in a groove. Boy, oh boy, it can get really old if you don't keep it fresh, can it? So I hope that listening to Current Sports provides some of that freshness in your life. And I just thank you guys so much for still allowing the show to be a part of your daily. All right. But yeah, I played pretty well. I was very shocked. I went out there on Saturday, you know, played 18 holes solo dolo. We had a great system at the course that I was at to make sure that, you know, social distancing was still taking place and that everybody was still being safe. You know, if you were playing with more than one golfer, you know, it was just me and one cart by myself, and they were spraying down every single golf cart with disinfectant. But if you were playing with more than one golfer, they were making sure that you and that other golfer, if you both were sharing a cart, that both of you were coming from the same household. If you weren't coming from the same household, if you didn't live in the same household, they would give you another cart. So, and they were making sure that every golfer, every group was at least 6 feet away from each other. So a great system. So saw a few people out there with masks like myself, just trying to stay safe, man. So, you know, but I played a solid round. I was very impressed that Al Woods still got it. So it was a great start to my 2020 golf season. All right, and I hope you guys had a great weekend out there, and I hope you stayed active and are finding ways to stay active at home, whether it be working out at the crib. You know, I hope you're doing that. I hope you're, you know, finding ways to keep that energy up and to keep the body movement, and, you know, maybe some push-ups, some sit-ups, something to stay active, because I believe that is so important, especially when it's so tempting to just sit on your couch each and every day and just eat. Don't do that. Find ways to stay active, folks. All right, on this Monday edition of Current Sports, primarily what we're focusing on are the final two episodes of The Last Dance, Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan documentary. Last night was so bittersweet. For those who tuned in and have been tuning in to The Last Dance docuseries these past 5 weeks, it has really been the highlight of our sports world. It has completely taken over our televisions, completely taken over our lives, as we get a never-before-seen look, as we got a never-before-seen look at one of the greatest teams in sports history and arguably the greatest athlete of all time in Michael Jeffrey Jordan. We saw Mike in a light that we had never seen before. He was willing to answer any question. He was willing to touch on any topic. And every single episode that has come out leading up to that final night on May 17th, every episode was so compelling and had some element that we may have known, but really didn't know. You know what I mean? I mean, the curtain was certainly pulled back, and the way the docuseries concluded was beautiful. And I didn't know whether to cry, whether to give a standing ovation, whether to jump for joy in awe of all 10 episodes. You know, my emotions were everywhere for a variety of reasons, which I'll comb through in just a moment. But overall, bravo. It was ESPN's most watched docuseries ever. And it broke so many ratings records. And during this time, man, with the coronavirus pandemic and no live sports being on TV, I mean, you can just imagine why the ratings were through the roof as well. I mean, first off, it's already compelling because we're talking about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. Jordan being one of the most popular athletes of all time still to this day. So that's automatically going to gain you eyeballs. But then you add into the fact that there are no other sports taking place. There's nothing else really on TV that can compete with that programming. I mean, so many people watch this. So we'll recap today, last night's final episodes of the Last Dance Chicago Bulls docuseries. And I got a lot to say. It was a great way to send out the doc, and I'm already getting withdrawals, knowing that this Sunday around 9 o'clock, we don't have two more episodes coming. All right, so it'll be a lot of the Last Dance talk on today's show. If you would like to be a part of the hour, you guys know that you can text us, not call, text us at 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News, and you can leave us a comment there, and I'll read it live here on the airwaves. You can also go to Twitter and tweet the show. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, and you can tweet the show at WKAR News. And because we're not live, of course, you know, I'll be reading your tweets and your comments and your text the following day on WKAR's current sports, if there's any confusion, of course, because I pre-tape the show now in the morning, and you guys hear it, of course, every day at 1 p.m. All right? So let's keep it pushing here. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, let's dive right into it. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer doubled down on Friday her stance on fans attending sporting events this fall in this great state. No full stadiums until a vaccine is available. Very clear, right? Again, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer saying on Friday, no full stadiums until a vaccine is available. Quote, we are going to be in a new normal for quite a while, Whitmer said during her news conference. Quote, and it doesn't mean that sports is over. Sports is not over. We need a vaccine, and we need mass quantities available to be able to test and acknowledge we have some immunity built up. We're not there yet. Until that happens, I think all the organizers of these leagues understand how important it is that we act responsibly here. Again, that coming directly from Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Whitmer's response echoed her comments from a radio interview on Tuesday, in which she stated that she doesn't think capacity crowds at events will be allowed this fall. There are more than 50,000 cases of the coronavirus in Michigan, and more than 5,000 people have died. Of those deaths, more than 2,000 come from Wayne County, where Detroit's major professional teams play. Right now, Michigan's stay-at-home order, as many of you know, if you don't know, now you do, that stay-at-home order runs through May 28th, so 10 days from now. And this just further puts in perspective my point that I don't believe that we will see collegiate sports, well, especially collegiate football, college football, this upcoming fall. I just don't see how it can happen. I think we'll be looking forward to the 2021 college football season, which is, again, for Michigan State fans out there, I know a bit unfortunate because you want to see how Mel Tucker perform this upcoming fall. All right, moving forward now, I got some news coming out of the camp of the Maize and Blue. Washington native Cole Bajema, he is headed back to the Pacific Northwest after just one season in Ann Arbor with Juwan Howard and the Michigan men's basketball squad. The Michigan basketball guard, who entered the transfer portal earlier this month, he announced via Twitter on Saturday night that he is transferring to Washington. Bajema's tweet, quote, "First of all, I want to thank the University of Michigan and all the fans for all the support. I am grateful for all the relationships and memories I have made there. After careful consideration, I am excited to announce that I will be committing to the University of Washington. Go Dawgs!" End quote. The 6'7", 175-pound guard originally committed to Michigan when John Beilein was the head coach. Juwan Howard, when he took over in May of 2019, moved quickly to ensure the four-star recruit stayed committed to Michigan. So, Cole Bajema, he is now heading to the University of Washington. All right, the Detroit Lions agreed to contract terms with fourth-round pick Logan Stenberg on Sunday. His agency, JL Sports, made the announcement. Stenberg is the first of the Lions' 9 draft picks to finalize a contract, though the deal is not yet signed. Rookie holdouts have become rare in the National Football League as the current collective bargaining agreement slots contracts for draft picks. According to Spotrac, Stenberg will have a cap hit of about $795,000 this fall, with a minimum base salary of $610,000. His signing bonus would be about $780,000. So again, Logan Stenberg becoming the first of the 9 draft picks to sign and agree with a contract with the Detroit Lions. All right, and we saw NASCAR and golf, live racing and golf, return to our lives this past weekend. I'll start with NASCAR here, as NASCAR returned on Sunday, and it didn't take long for Kevin Harvick to social distance himself from the competition. Harvick led 159 of the 293 laps in the auto racing's return following a 10-week absence due to the pandemic, and Harvick cruised to his 50th career victory. He now sits tied for 12th on NASCAR's all-time wins list. Now, Darlington Raceway hosted the Real Heroes 400, which had the look and feel unlike any NASCAR race. The grandstands were completely empty. There were no tailgaters, no face coverings, you know, on the faces of tailgaters outside. And it was just weird. Just weird, wasn't it? And Kevin Harvick, during his post-win interview, you know, he acknowledged just how weird it was not having fans in the stands and said that he really misses the fans. This is different. So, salute, though, to Kevin Harvick. Nonetheless, he was your winner yesterday. And live golf returned to our lives as Rory McIlroy. He delivered the winning shot on Sunday as live golf returned to TVs for a skins game that revealed plenty of rust and raised more than $5 million for COVID-19 relief funds. Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson, who had not won a skin since the sixth hole, had a chance to win the final six skins worth $1.1 million on the final hole at Seminole in the TaylorMade Driving Relief Exhibition. Both missed, and they prepared to the par 3 17th for a closest to the pin contest. The final carryover gave McIlroy and Johnson $1.85 million for the American Nurses Foundation. That is awesome, awesome stuff. And Fowler, who made seven birdies, made $1.15 million for the CDC Foundation. So really cool stuff to see live golf on our televisions again, raising funds for the coronavirus pandemic. Love it. But we're going to have to get to this. We're going to have to get used to this new normal, not having fans in the stands, not having fans line the greens. It's definitely weird, and it does take a little off the live sporting experience, as I've been stating for a while now. But hey, to have sports back in our lives, live sports back in our lives, no matter in what way, shape, or form, I'm sure many of you appreciate it. I do as well, even though it is really weird. All right? Okay. That does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, after this first break, we are going to dive into the final two episodes of The Last Dance. I'll give you my takeaways from those final two episodes and my final takeaways on the docuseries as a whole, because it was a fun 5 weeks. We'll be right back. You are listening to the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, I hope you guys are having a great start to your week. It is Monday, May 18th, 2020, as we continue to truck along here and try to heal as a country, as a world, as we try to heal going through, of course, the coronavirus pandemic. I really hope you all are staying safe and staying smart, all right? Let's dive right into it, because the sports world and beyond, really, is still buzzing after the 10-part docuseries entitled The Last Dance, profiling the Chicago Bulls' final run, final championship run in 1997, 1998, and getting a never-before-seen look into one of the greatest athletes of all time, certainly the greatest basketball player of all time. LeBron fans, fall back. Fall back. And the greatest team sports athlete of all time, in Michael Jeffrey Jordan. And what I want to do first, because again, I'm still digesting all of what we saw in these last 5 weeks, and I already know me, I'm going to get the DVD set of this docuseries just to have a physical copy of it. And I already know in these next few weeks, I am going to be going back and watching multiple episodes, if not the whole thing. And there's just so much to digest. So what I want to do is first, before I give you my biggest takeaways of the docuseries, I want to give you my takeaways from what we saw last night. Episodes 9 and 10. And by the way, can we give the producers, the director, the editors, everybody that was involved with The Last Dance, can we give them a round of applause? Because at the end of the day, the reason why we got this docuseries, it wasn't supposed to come out until later on this year, much later on this year. But because of the pandemic and sports fans being starved everywhere, ESPN and Netflix, they were so gracious. And they gave the okay to move the docuseries up. Now, in doing that, that put a lot of pressure on the creators of the docuseries, all of the everyone involved, especially the editors, because they were literally editing The Last Dance up until the final week. I know last week they were still working on episode 10. How incredible is that? And, you know, I do also want to give a big shout out to my man, Ryan Slocum, sports reporter and anchor for ABC 12 in Flint. You know, he has his own podcast now, and he hit me up yesterday afternoon saying, "Hey, Al, are you available, man? I want to have you on my podcast on Sunday night, and, you know, we'll go live on Zoom to talk about those final two episodes of The Last Dance." Ryan and I kid you not, we ended up talking for close to 2 hours. It was crazy. Close to 2 hours we were sitting there on Zoom discussing those final two episodes and our thoughts on The Last Dance. It was amazing. It really was amazing chatting with him, man. And it was just so much to comb through. And that will be coming out later on today. I'll be sure. For those who follow me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR, and for those who follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Al3SPN, I'll be sure to tweet out that link, and we even try to snatch a preview for you guys as I get my final thoughts on the docuseries along with Ryan. And I'll also be on Jack Ebling's show, The Drive with Jack, later on this afternoon as well. You can listen to that by simply going to the Spotlight Radio Productions website, Spotlight Radio Media, and checking out that interview. Or just following him on Facebook at The Drive with Jack as well. He'll be going live there. So I'll be on at either 4:30 or around 5-ish. So, but there's so much to digest. And last night, what I discussed with Ryan was, first off, it was really cool to hear from Reggie Miller. We all know that Mike and Reggie had an interesting relationship throughout their playing days going against each other because, I mean, both of them played in the East. And, you know, the Indiana Pacers were a really tough and talented team. And I totally forgot, I don't know how I forgot this, but Jalen Rose, who was on last night's docuseries, Jalen Rose was also a part of that team. You know, Rick Smits and Mark Jackson, and you know, that was a really good team. And Mike went on the record to say last night that next to the Detroit Pistons, the Indiana Pacers were the toughest team that they faced during those championship years in the 90s. And part of that had to do with the fact that they were led by Reggie Miller, who was just a fearless competitor, one of the greatest shooters of all time. So savvy and just relentless. And Reggie told the story about how he first entered the league and he was going against Michael Jordan and Chicago Bulls. And Reggie was having a good game in the first half and talking a little bit of trash. And Jordan heard him and said, "Okay, I got you." In the second half of that game, Jordan goes completely off. I think Reggie Miller, he mentioned that he had like something like only like 2 points in that second half after having a good start to the game. And Michael Jordan, in walking off the court, said, "Hey, you now refer to me as Black Jesus." Well, no, he said that, "Don't ever talk trash to Black Jesus." And that's when Reggie Miller never referred to him again as Michael Jordan, but he either called him Black Jesus or the Black Cat. Never Michael Jordan. Oh, that was a great story to start last night, and you just knew it was going to be a fun final night. And then it got into You know, and here's the point Ryan made when talking with him last night. You know, last night was probably the most basketball that we saw out of the 10 episodes. Those two episodes were the most basketball focused out of the entire series. Because we got right into hoops, man. Episode 9, talking about, you know, the Pacers giving the Bulls some trouble. And, you know, the shot in 1998, the Eastern Conference Finals series is tied as Reggie Miller, you know, the push off on Mike right to his chest. He curls, gets the ball, shoots the three, nothing but the bottom of the net. I love that. But the camera panned to Larry Bird's face, and yeah, I think it was Jalen Rose that called it out. He's like, just pan the camera to Larry Bird's face. And Larry, like, has no reaction to it. You know, he does have a reaction. He's kind of like, oh, boy. Okay. He kind of has, like, the oh, boy face. Like, oh, okay. All right. Okay. Yep. The reason why, because there was still some time left. You know, not much time, but Mike doesn't need much time to get off a shot and possibly still win the game. And Mike got a good look. He had the double pump to get that good look. He tried to bank it in from the three, the left wing. It doesn't go. Game over. Now, I didn't see Larry's face after that, but I'm pretty sure he was still thinking to himself that, hey, man, they still have the best player on planet Earth. That's just, you know, that we survived and the series proceeds, but man, I'm not letting my guard down. that was really cool to see. And then we saw, of course, the Indiana Pacers actually, they pushed Jordan and the Bulls. And this is something that was rare during those six championship rings, during that run. You know, the Bulls were barely pushed to the brink, pushed to seven games, pushed to a deciding game. You really had to be a special team to do that because it was so rare. And the Indiana Pacers were a special team. They were able to do that. And, you know, they show Mike hours before tip time in that game seven, sitting back with Ahmad Rashad. And isn't it amazing that, you know, Ahmad Rashad, a member of the media, is just hanging back hours before tip time with Michael Jordan, you know, just hours before he has to go live, right? You know, Ryan was joking that, man, don't you got to do like a live shot? Don't you got to prep your notes or something, man? You're just sitting back with MJ. But they were so close, Ahmad Rashad and Michael. They were so, so close, man. It's just different to see, you know, especially me being in the world of journalism, being a reporter. I mean, can you just imagine being friends? I can't imagine being a journalist and being friends with the best basketball player on planet Earth and having that kind of access while still trying to do my job as a reporter. I mean, that's just so different. So, so different. Oh, man. And don't forget it. Ahmad Rashad was a pretty good football player as well. I mean, we're talking about Pro Bowl level NFL player. So I'm pretty sure part of the synergy that Mike and Ahmad Rashad had and still have to this day is the fact that they are both athletes and can relate on that front as well. A lot of people think that Ahmad Rashad was so good as a broadcaster that, man, he must have just done broadcasting. No, he was first an athlete. But Mike sitting back in the suit, mentally preparing for a game seven. And that was a knockdown, drag them out game. But the Bulls, of course, as we all know, they ended up winning that series and going on to the NBA Finals. And then, you know, Brian Russell, given some backstory there. Brian Russell, when Michael retired that first time to go play baseball, you know, he runs into Brian, and Brian is talking some trash, like, man, why'd you retire? You know I wanted a piece of you. I'm paraphrasing here, but I can guard you. Mike, being the uber competitor that he is, being the borderline psychotic competitive man that he is, looking for any little thing to motivate him when he is going against some kind of competition. You better believe that he never forgot those comments from Brian Russell, and he used that as motivation when he returned to the game and when they put Russell on MJ. and he took it personal, and he went at Brian Russell. That motivated him. That was awesome to see. And before I dive into the flu game here, you know, what I've really appreciated when it comes to the filmmakers of this docuseries is how they've interwoven the backstories. And, you know, what I don't get, you know, some people who criticize the docuseries, they talk about the timeline and how the timeline jumps up and down from year to year. But I don't get how that's confusing and how you can knock that timeline, because for me, it's not confusing at all. I just think society is lazy, and any kind of thinking that we have to do, we just immediately begin to complain. But the timeline, you know, what I understand is, you know, when you look at the timeline, it's pretty simple. The timeline will go to 97, 98, that last dance year, and talk about a particular topic, and then go to the past to give you history on that particular topic. What is so confusing about that? Again, we just don't like to think as a society. I don't understand that criticism whatsoever. But again, that's really the only criticism that the docuseries has gotten. And if that's the only criticism that you get, you're doing pretty darn well, right? But one of the backstories that they brought up, well, two of the backstories that they brought up that I really appreciated last night was one, Steve Kerr talking about the death of his father. Because I didn't know that story about Steve Kerr. You know, Michael and Steve Kerr sharing that unfortunate commonality as it relates to their fathers, their late fathers, both slain, both murdered. Steve Kerr's father murdered overseas as an educator, shot in the head. That was jarring. Jarring stuff. And what really surprised me, though, I mean, it's not every day where, you know, you have a teammate, where you play with a teammate who has undergone the same tragedy that you have undergone with your father, losing your father. I'm surprised that Michael and Steve didn't really talk about that or really didn't bond over that. But, you know, Michael is such a very private man, which is why it makes this docuseries even more surprising as to how open Mike was. But they really didn't bond over that. But hearing of that story, learning of that story, because there were a lot of people who didn't know that story, including myself, you know, that was a really emotional part of the docuseries. And then further adding to that, you know, the relationship that Michael had with his former security guard, Gus, and how when Michael's father passed in the mid-90s, Gus, who was a main member of his, I don't know, entourage, as you can say, Gus was like a father figure to Mike. And he sadly passed away from cancer in 2000, so 2 years after Michael won that final championship in a Chicago Bulls jersey. But, you know how they profiled Gus and his relationship with Mike, and when Gus got sick, how Mike was at the hospital every single day, and how Mike really leaned on Gus, and Mike, I think he used the word needed. I needed to have him around. You know, that was really touching. So this docuseries has had a great balance of not only just talking basketball, but giving you backstories and context and interviews, you know, those human stories that really, you know, people can relate to. I really have enjoyed that in the docuseries. So, the flu game. Ah, boy, a lot of people got enlightened last night, right? Oh, boy, a lot of people got enlightened. Because I had known this story, but it just rolls off the tongue better when you say the flu game, not the food poisoning game. It just rolls off the tongue better. because, you know, the flu game wasn't really the flu. You know, to hear Tim Grover tell the story, Tim Grover, Michael Jordan's trainer, and Tim, you know, I'm ordering his book this week. I'm getting his book in the mail this week. He was the trainer of Kobe Bryant and other greats of the game. But, you know, Tim Grover tells the story of how, you know, they're in Utah the night before the game, before that magical flu game. Mike got hungry. Nothing was really open but one pizza place. They order a pizza from Mike. Mike is the only one who eats the pizza. But prior to that, five guys show up to deliver the pizza, which is a bit weird. You know, I don't know. Maybe they got tipped off that, okay, we're delivering this pizza to Michael Jordan. And who knows, man? Let the conspiracy theories fly. Knowing that, okay, you're in Utah. They don't like Michael Jordan and Chicago Bulls. They're trying to beat Michael Jordan and Chicago Bulls. Maybe we put a little extra something on this pizza if this is indeed going to Michael Jordan. If it is indeed going to the belly of Michael Jordan. And that pizza wasn't right. The pizza gets delivered, Michael eats it, and he is throwing up. He's in sweats and having chills all night. Grover is called to his hotel room, Michael's hotel room, and he's curled up in a ball. He talks to his mother, Dolores, and Dolores is telling Mike, you know, you're not feeling well. And Mike is saying, look, I got to play this game, Mom. I got to play this game. And what does Mike do? He goes out there, plays in that game, and he puts up 38 points. 38 points. Doing it while feeling like absolute crap. The camera panning to Michael Jordan during timeouts. Waiting, you know, just rushing to get to a chair on the bench so that he can rest a little bit before he has to go back out there and log more minutes and try and will his team to a victory. An ice pack on his head. Towel over his shoulder, looking completely out of it as Phil Jackson tries to talk and draw up the game plan. Mike, it looks like he doesn't even want to hear what the game plan is. Just I just got to get through this game. And like Scottie Pippen said, man, last night, sometimes when you're sick, and I don't know, some of you may be able to relate to this. I can a little bit. When you're sick and you know you got a job to do still, You can dig deep and find something that you didn't know was there. You can find an extra gear that you didn't know was there. The human body is an amazing thing. But for Michael Jordan to find that extra gear, knowing that all eyeballs are on him, knowing that he is the greatest player ever, all eyeballs are on him, it's the NBA Finals, and you're going after another ring. And to go out there and put up, not 15 points, not 20-something points, not 32, not 34, but 38 points in a tight game, tie game, 40 seconds left. Mike, you know, again, just laboring out there, throws it down to Scottie. They kick it back out. Jordan nails the three that essentially puts home the game for the Bulls. And then Scottie runs over to him, man. That famous shot of Scottie holding Mike up as they walk to the bench. Oh, boy, one of the greatest moments in NBA history. One of the greatest moments in NBA history. And the fact that, you know, a lot of people are now finding out that it is the food poisoning game and not the flu game, it still doesn't take away that performance, because at the end of the day, Michael Jordan felt like absolute crap, and he still showed up. He still showed up because at the end of the day, it was about showing up and doing his job no matter how he felt, because he felt like, and he knew that he had an obligation to his team, to Phil Jackson, the head coach, and to the entire city of Chicago to always go out there and perform and give it his best. And that's one thing you can never say about Michael Jordan, that he never gave it his best. He always gave it his best. He always showed up. He was always there. That was one of my favorite parts of last night. And then I'm going to dive into my final few takeaways. I got to talk about Dennis Rodman. Oh, boy, I got to get to that. I got to talk about the 1998 Finals, Game 5. Scottie with the hurt back. And then I got to touch on the Jerry Reinsdorf explanation as to why the famed Chicago Bulls had to be broken up. That and more. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. You just heard a few of my takeaways from last night's episodes 9 and 10, the final two episodes of The Last Dance, Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan docuseries. Got a few more that I need to touch on. Dennis Rodman disappearing during the 1998 Finals. I mean, can you believe that? Can you believe? I didn't know that story. And I'm so shocked as to how I didn't know about that story. I can't believe that story doesn't get more press. But he's Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman just was a different dude. To leave during the NBA Finals, series is at 2-1. And to go participate in a WCW wrestling match, Hulk Hogan and company there, during the NBA Finals is legendary. I mean, can you just imagine if that happened? I feel like we've said that multiple times when it pertains to Dennis Rodman in this docuseries. Can you imagine if that happened in 2020? How big of a story that would be. And it was a big story back then, but it's not widely talked about today. Legendary. And again, the Bulls knew how to deal with Dennis Rodman, man. They gave him a lot of slack on that leash because they knew how important his play was on that team. And a lot of people forget, man, Dennis Rodman was 38 doing this. He was 38 years old, folks. You know, he didn't start playing basketball until late. You know, during those bad boy years. I mean, he was like 26 years old at the time. A lot of people forget that. But Dennis Rodman disappearing and then coming back. Oh, boy. That was amazing. Amazing. I didn't know that story. And then, you know, the 1998 Finals, that final game, that final shot, Bob Costas on the call. How that was filmed, the setup, the music, the footage. It was beautiful to watch, man. It was beautiful. You know, that's a play that has been replayed so many times. It's one of the greatest, those final moments, one of the greatest sequences in basketball lore. Michael Jordan, that final sequence sums up what Michael Jeffrey Jordan was all about. Not just the greatest offensive player to ever play, but one of the greatest defensive players to ever play the game as well. Doing it on both sides of the court. And then throw in clutch. Bulls need a bucket. Time is a ticking. Mike goes to the hole strong. Layup off the glass. he recognizes that the Utah Jazz may go down to Karl Malone because they've gone to him on that same play multiple times in that fourth quarter. Jordan this time doesn't go with his man off the pick. The ball goes down to Karl. Jordan stays. The mailman doesn't see MJ on his weak side. Jordan steals the ball. And then Jordan goes down on the other side of the court. Phil Jackson doesn't want to give Utah the opportunity to set up some kind of defense. He lets MJ do what he's done throughout his entire career. Brian Russell is guarding. Jordan drives to the right. The pat on the butt. Crossover. Flick of the wrist. Hold the pose. Game over. Essentially game over. There was still a little bit of time left. Utah can't do anything with it. Game over. That final sequence, again, one of the greatest sequences in basketball history. And it just adds to the legend that is Michael Jordan. To go out that way, for that to be your final shot in a Chicago Bulls jersey, because we all know that was the last dance. It adds mystique and adds to the legend of MJ. Six finals appearances, six wins, six finals MVPs. The perfect basketball player. Always showed up. Always was big time in big moments. Always got the win. And I loved how they showed Mike that brilliant footage of Mike just sitting there drinking Gatorade, trying to catch his breath because he knew the job wasn't done. He knew the job wasn't done. There was still some time left. I believe it was like 5 seconds left. He's just sitting there trying to mentally prepare for that next possession to play defense and to close this thing out to win that sixth ring. And they got that footage, that raw footage they showed of Mike just sitting there trying to collect his thoughts, drinking the Gatorade, and the camera panning from Mike to the clock to Mike to the clock to Mike. Wow. One of my favorite moments of the series. And the way it ended, Jerry Reinsdorf trying to give some explanation as to why everything ended after seeing the footage. And I don't have to, you know, there's so much to uncover here. I might have to get to more of this tomorrow. But the footage of them going to the hotel and everybody being at the hotel and greeting the Bulls. And no, they didn't go out to the club after. They go up to the hotel room and are running around like little kids with a championship trophy. Jordan's playing the piano in his room. Oh, I love that. I love that. But Jerry Reinsdorf tried to give an explanation as to what happened in the offseason, saying that he offered Phil Jackson the opportunity to come back because he felt like he earned it, you think? Phil decided not to because he knew that Jerry Krause didn't want him to come back. Wouldn't have been fair to Jerry Krause. Michael is played the footage and he says, oh, come on, dude. Like, come on. Like you could have made this happen. You could have offered Steve Kerr and Judd Bushler and all those guys 1 year contracts. I had been playing on 1 year contracts. I would have taken a 1 year contract to try and go after number seven. Scotty would have taken some convincing with Scotty, but look, Scotty eventually I think would have came on board. You could have made this happen. You didn't. So don't give me that. And Jordan went on to describe how maddening it still is to this day. How maddening it is to leave the game of basketball at his peak in 1998, knowing that he probably could have won at least one more in that what was an NBA shortened season due to the lockout. I'll get to more of that on tomorrow's Current Sports, all right? But your thoughts on The Last Dance, I'll read them tomorrow, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That is the number that you can text. I'll read your comments tomorrow. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. You can weigh in that way, and you can tweet us. Tweet the show at WKAR News. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR. Catch me on The Drive with Jack Ebling later on this afternoon around 4:35-ish. Until next time, folks, we are on a 23-hour break. See you Tuesday. Be smart, be safe, and be easy, people.